Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, hello everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's SmackDown Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing this week's SmackDown at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486. If you'd like to talk to us live, of course, you can always hit us up in the chat room. And we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, SmackDown wasn't live since it was in the UK. It wasn't live, of course, for us. But SmackDown, I think, had a lot to address. There were quite a few people who were very angry over the Shane McMahon angle of Shane McMahon winning the World Cup. And yes, it was a planned angle. Wasn't a last-minute substitution. It wasn't anything else. It was a planned angle. And I think a lot of people felt, A, it was disrespectful. B, if it was going to lead to Shane McMahon heel turn, it was going to be a copycat of Raw. There was a lot to answer for. And we started out with Paige calling out Shane McMahon to the ring. And much to my... chorus of boos, by the way. Chorus of boos. The fans were more than happy to vocalize their displeasure with this gimmick. But much to my surprise, Shane McMahon's attitude did not really seem to change. You know, we had speculated Shane McMahon would be certainly turning heel based on this. He kind of had a heel celebration in Saudi Arabia, acting like he just won the Super Bowl when he, you know, literally basically just interjected himself into a tournament. But instead, he was announced as the best in the world. He clearly said, I fully realize I'm not the best in the world. Winning this cup didn't mean I was the best in the world. Winning this cup was for no other reason than I did not want it forfeited to Raw. I did what I did not to self-aggrandizement. I did it to make sure that SmackDown would have this cup, or try to make sure that SmackDown would have this cup, as opposed to just having it forfeited to Dolph Ziggler. Didn't really get that great of a reaction. Fans still weren't buying it. Out comes Daniel Bryan. Because of course, Shane is addressing the Survivor Series, and he has decided that Daniel Bryan will be the team captain of the SmackDown Survivor Series team, and that was met with great success. And then Daniel Bryan tries to rehab Shane a little bit by saying, you know, I'm glad you acknowledged you're not the best in the world. I understand what you did and why you did it. And he tried to rehab that a little bit. Out then comes The Miz, limping still selling the leg injury, and says, I fully understand what you did too. In fact, I commend you for it. We didn't want the cup to go to Raw. What you did was great. It was heroic even. But here's what I don't like. How is it that I win two matches? Had I not won those two matches, we wouldn't even had a chance at it. And I am not the Survivor Series captain? Two-thirds of the cup should belong to me, which actually got a reaction from the audience, a positive reaction. So Shane says, well, you know, you actually make a pretty good point. He confers with Paige a minute and says, you know what, you're the team captain. The Miz is the team captain. But also Daniel Bryan is the team captain. We're going to have co-team captains. And at first, this doesn't appear to be the greatest idea in the world. But the show's basic foundation was structured around the tenuous relationship between Daniel Bryan and The Miz and how they were ever going to function. Now, The Miz brought it up and said, how do you expect us to function? How do you expect us to coexist as captains. And Shane says, well, the one thing is for sure, you don't care for each other very much, but for whatever weird reason, you seem to bring the best out in each other, and that's what I need. And they agreed. Now, The Miz has toned down his rhetoric, his heel rhetoric, a bit. Not a lot. He's made a great kind of a smooth transition into, I'm still a heel, but it really depends on your perspective. And he's no longer, the old Miz would have came out and said, Shane McMahon had to hog the glory, didn't he? I never one time said that I was quitting. The referee made a boneheaded decision. All Shane had to do was tell the referee he's still good to go. I told Shane I was good to go, but that wasn't good enough, Shane. You had to hog the glory, right? That's what the old Miz would have done. He didn't do that. So there's something up. Now, we had speculated the Miz might turn face, and we had speculated that would be a horrible idea. A horrible idea. We've seen the Miz as a face. It doesn't work. It simply doesn't work. However, we have not seen the Miz in this position, which is more of a anti-hero. It's more of a guy who's still kind of a heel, but he's a little bit more likable. He's a little bit more rootable. And if the Miz can pull this off, and believe me when I tell you, probably only the Miz could pull this off, it could be another Becky Lynch situation where you say, well, I guess technically they're a heel, but the fans like them, which I'm usually against. But the way Becky Lynch has pulled it off, I don't necessarily see how she's considered a heel. WWE wants you to boo her or wanted you to boo her, but they didn't give you any reason to. So you didn't. So she's not really a heel. The Miz, at least this week, didn't really do anything that you would say, well, I don't know. I had a boo him over that. Oh, boo, the Miz did this, or boo, the Miz did that. Not really. So I think they're easing up the Miz a little and saying, look, you still got to be the arrogant, smug, devious guy you always are, but we might be playing you more to the middle. Now, a lot of guys can't walk the middle. Probably can. But at least in this one opening segment, they set the tone for the night, and the night was that the Miz and Daniel Bryan are co-captains and will now have to pick a team. And when you set the tone for a night like that, and you have a continuing storyline that's going to take the whole show to play out, you have a reason to watch it to the end. And these matches that normally wouldn't mean very much, let's face it, Samoa Joe versus Jeff Hardy means nothing at all if it's not for a Survivor Series position. Almas versus Rey Mysterio doesn't mean much unless it's for that Survivor Series position. Then it starts to mean something. So they did a really good job, Mike, I think, this week of setting the tone for the show to make it mean something.
Right. And look, we'll get to the tag team match in a little while. But, yeah, you're right. They set this up. This is them playing sort of a long game. They set it up, and then all throughout last night, Tuesday night, you know, all throughout that show, we were following and we were following, and this guy comes out and says, I want this guy on the team, and then the Miz says, okay, I'm going to make my pick, and it's going to be this guy, X, Y, you know, and we'll get to whether or not they agree with each other a couple of times or whatever, but again, like you said, only the Miz, because he's a halfway decent actor, only the Miz could carry off not being Miz, too Miz-like, and still carry off that, if not a heel, then being in that sort of gray area, you know?
Yeah, and it's definitely a gray area, and I guess that's where they're heading with him to some extent, unless this is all a ploy and it's going to implode at the Survivor Series. I don't know. But we'll get to this a little bit later, what I actually think might be happening here. But, Todd, I mean, I thought the opening was good because it set a tone for the show that followed through until the end.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was a pretty good opening. And like you said about Paige and everything, she asked Shane McMahon to come out to do the promo. And you know, the
chorus of boos.
Yeah.
Chorus of boos, Todd.
Yeah, I seen that too. And it was not a good reception there.
No, it was a terrible reception, and it showed the fans did not like it. But I think everything that happened after that kind of, it was damage control, and it sort of worked. It sort of worked. I mean, fans eased up and said, I guess we're not going to see Shane McMahon turn heel good because we don't want another heel authority figure. I guess the explanation is satisfactory, and oh, Survivor Series is shaping up to be pretty good. Now, I hate to be the type of guy who jumps on a bandwagon too early because the WWE is infamous for screwing things up that you couldn't possibly screw up or shouldn't be able to. But so far, the Survivor Series is looking killer. I mean, it's looking killer. AJ Styles against Brock Lesnar. There's a part of me that says they can't let Lesnar lose, but at the same time, there's no way they're throwing AJ Styles under the bus twice. So this is a very interesting match. Shinsuke Nakamura against Seth Rollins could be one of the matches of the year if they let it be. We find out the bar is going against the AOP. That's going to be some war. Becky Lynch against Ronda Rousey, and no matter how much you're in Ronda Rousey's back pocket, you cannot ignore the movement of that Becky Lynch has started. These fans are totally behind Becky Lynch. And a submission loss at Survivor Series is going to stall it. And I don't know if the WWE will do that. I think the WWE had every intention of doing that. But as we get closer to Survivor Series and Becky Lynch is still red hot, they may have to reconsider this. I don't think Becky Lynch is going to win. But they may have to reconsider the way they're going to play this. So all these matches are looking really good. So then we find out we're getting the Survivor Series tag team elimination, and the winners of A New Day versus the Usos will be the team captain. And we get a pretty good match out of the Usos. Not their best match by any stretch of the imagination, but we get a pretty solid match out of the Usos and the New Day. The Usos win. Kofi Kingston was really the star of this match. He did a couple of really good. The Usos win, and then they take to the microphone to say, look, everybody knows we are the tag team division at this point. And the very first people we're going to pick is the New Day. Well, you know, that sounds great. And it sounds like, great sportsmanship and mutual respect. But in reality, since the bar can't be in it, yeah, there isn't anybody else to pick. Who the hell are you going to pick on SmackDown? If it's not the New Day, of course that'll be your first pick. It would be anybody's first pick. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't like, well, out of mutual respect, we are going to pick you, Mike. Who the hell else would the Usos have picked?
You're right on that. And as far as the match itself goes, it wasn't their best match, but it was better than most, you know?
It was a good one.
It was a good one. I mean, it wasn't no. Lord knows it wasn't their Hell in a Cell cage match, whatever it was, but it was a good one. And I tend to believe you put these two teams, it doesn't matter which two of the New Day you put in against the Usos, it's going to be a very, very good match.
Yeah, they always put on good matches. I'm satisfied with the match. I'm satisfied with the outcome. I'm kind of glad the New Day didn't win. to be honest. I think the Usos as the team captains are probably the best choice. We then get SmackDown Women's Champion Becky Lynch coming out and cutting a promo on Ronda Rousey. A kind of a weird one. Becky's been brilliant on the mic. Nothing short of brilliant. And she's, and part of this was good. But some of it was a little weird. And I really had just hoped she would come out and say, look, I'm not an idiot. You know, I wasn't born yesterday. I know you have MMA credentials. I know you're tough. I know you're this, that, and the other thing. Here's what I also know. You've been coddled ever since you got here. You've had hand-picked opponents based on favoritism. And you've never really, she did say you've never really been tested. She's never really been tested. And you're going to be. Because SmackDown doesn't owe anything to Ronda Rousey. Maybe Raw does. Maybe Raw owes you special privileges. But SmackDown doesn't. That's what I wanted her to say. She then grabs the microphone and says, well, you know, since I'm in a riled up mood, anybody who wants to come out here, I'll fight. And Sanity come out. Now, at first, I'm saying to myself, this isn't a flat-out attempt to turn Becky Lynch, is it? Because they're not going to try to hit this ring on her or intimidate her out of the ring or something. Where's this going? And then, lo and behold, Nikki Cross makes her debut. That's a nice surprise for the fans. And I'm glad that hooked up with Sanity again. However, this is sort of bittersweet because I'm knowing as she's running down to the ring, you ain't winning, honey. There's no way on earth that you're beating Becky Lynch before Ronda Rousey. So we already know Nikki Cross is going to get thrown to the wolves, but I say to myself, well, it would not surprise me in any way, shape, or form if Sanity tries to intimidate Becky Lynch at ringside or something and causes a DQ or something. Something's going to happen because you can't just debut a girl and she, you know, taps out. Well, guess what? They debuted a girl and she tapped out. That's insanity. That's not sanity. That's insanity. You wasted Nikki Cross. Now there are going to be people who say, well, you know, it's Becky's the champion. There's no shame in losing to her. Yeah, but Becky's the champion who didn't even know Nikki Cross was in the building, supposedly. Nikki Cross, who's supposed to be a championship-quality female wrestler, runs to the ring. She's supposed to be intimidating and crazy and whatever. And Becky Lynch is, A, not one bit intimidated or anything by her. B, taps her out. Not really a huge amount of problem. And you say, okay, Nikki Cross is just another body on SmackDown. That's not a good debut. It's not a good debut. Would have been much better if Nikki Cross was disqualified or Becky Lynch took her belt and walked away. Wouldn't that have been cool? Becky Lynch has done that before. Maybe Nikki Cross gives her a damn good run for 8 minutes and then, you know, she takes the belt and says, I'm out of here. I'm the one who issued the challenge. It's not like it was a booked match. I'm out. I don't have to do this. But they wanted someone to feed to Becky Lynch to show Becky Lynch can tap somebody out with the armbar. That's what they wanted because they want you to think that Ronda Rousey may have to tap out to the armbar. But I don't think Nikki Cross was the right one, Todd, because they could do something with Nikki Cross, and I don't like it when a debut is a loss like this.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said. It was pretty cool to see her the debut on the SmackDown roster, but it was a bad debut for how she lost in the debut match. And like you said, I would have her lost like a count out, a disqualification, not by a pinfall or a submission. I just didn't like that.
Becky Lynch walk away. She's the one who issued the challenge, Mike. She has no obligation to stay and fight her.
Yeah, she has no obligation to stay and fight her. And look, I mean, that should have broken out into a brawl from the get-go, that match, you know. Becky Lynch was throwing all kinds of wrestling moves on her, and we know what a Nikki Cross is. She's she's sort of a well-defined character. She's a brawler, and they should allow that thing to break down into a brawl. And at that point, when she says, "I can't get the armbar on this chick," I'm gonna just go ahead and walk away. That's what should have happened. Or don't waste her like that. You know, you could absolutely have somebody come in that La Luchadora costume and have her wrestle that chick or whoever that chick would have been, and do exactly what she did. You know, and
at this stage of the game, anyone would have been better, Mike. Because anyone would have been better. I don't care who it is. I don't even care if it's Naomi. If you wanted to have Naomi tap, great. Naomi's tapped before. We know where she is, but you don't debut a character and say, here's Nikki Cross. She's Sanity's female member. She's crazy. She's nuts. She's, you know, psychotic. Oh, she tapped out. Okay, well then, I guess she's no threat. The right way to play that off, in my opinion, would have been just no conclusion, where Becky Lynch would have simply said, I have no obligation to fight you. After maybe, you know, you have Becky Lynch dominate her for a minute or two, and then when Nikki Cross makes her big comeback and it's looking like she's nuts, you just have Becky Lynch slide out of the ring, do the old, you know, finger to the temple swirling, you're nuts, and I don't need to fight you, and have her say that. I don't need to fight a lunatic. I have better things to do. At least it would have saved it, so you would have got a feud out of it. So I'm a little disappointed in this, quite frankly. Let's go to Paige when she gets out there with her. But we should say backstage, Daniel Bryan and The Miz were brilliant. Brilliant. All night long, both of them. The first segment we see is Shane McMahon saying you guys need to pick your teams and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And each person will get to pick one and whatever, and then The Miz says, well, I want to pick mine first, and I got mine. Shane McMahon, it's you. And Shane says, no, you know, it's crazy. I, you know, be kissing my butt just because I named you co-captain. And Daniel Bryan surprisingly says, no, you know what? I agree with him. I can't believe I'm saying it, but I do agree with him. You got the most to lose. You're the SmackDown general manager or the CEO, whatever he is. And you got the most to lose, and you're the one who got in the ring and fought for the cup for SmackDown. And, you know, I actually think it's a good idea. So Shane says, oh, okay, well, then I'm in. And The Miz, kind of out of character, says, well, since I picked the first one, I'm going to give you the opportunity to pick the second one. To Daniel Bryan. Now, all night long, they had this interaction where they would just kind of smile at each other like, I can't believe I'm agreeing with you on certain things. And I knew that was going to lead somewhere. And where it basically led is he picks Rey Mysterio, which I'm not really sure. See, this is where it breaks down a little bit, though. When The Miz says, who's Rey Mysterio beaten since he's gotten here? Daniel Bryan says, well, he's beaten Shinsuke Nakamura, he's beaten this guy, he's beaten that guy, he beat you. And The Miz says, well, that's a fluke. Well, The Miz didn't say, and in Crown Jewel, I beat him. Didn't say that, which is weird. It's almost like Crown Jewel doesn't exist. But The Miz says, look, let him fight Almas tonight, and if he's impressive, I'll agree with you on that. I'll give my blessing to that one. And then later on, they say, you know, the last pick, we should both have to pick a person, and whoever wins, they'll be the last member. That way, nobody gets an extra pick. Once again, The Miz says, I agree with that. That's a good idea. And they sort of look at each other weird again, like, we're agreeing a lot here. How come we're agreeing so much? But this is an interesting thing, Mike. It led me to believe we're looking at either The Miz moving more to the middle as a sort of a gray area face, or perhaps we're being set up.
Yeah, perhaps for being set up, because if you look at the way they were smiling at each other, it was sort of passive aggressive, you know,
right.
type thing where I don't like you, and you don't like me, but I'm sort of agreeing with you here, but this isn't going to last long. That's how I took that, you know, and we know the end goal here is a long game. It's not just a Survivor Series. They want to get back to Daniel Bryan versus The Miz. That's the long game. And this could be a step to doing that at some point.
You know, I thought that is the long game, but I'm starting to question whether that's the long game. We'll talk a little bit about that later, but they were great all night long. The Miz and Daniel Bryan are exactly what professional wrestling is supposed to be. They're able to seamlessly have a conversation where it doesn't sound scripted. We won't talk much about it, but man, was AJ Styles' promo scripted. Oh, my God. He may as well have held up a piece of paper and read it off of that. Wow, was that bad. But no, they're very smooth in their delivery. Everything they say harkens back to, oh, yeah, I remember that. That's what I like about The Miz, and that's what I like about Daniel Bryan. I don't think either one of those two guys think wrestling fans are stupid. And when they bring up references from a year ago, they assume most wrestling fans will know what I'm talking about. And they're right. So what they say makes sense because they have some base of a point of base from it. Anyway, Paige comes out and she announces one by one, as if they're beauty pageant contestants, who is going to be her SmackDown Survivor Series team. And she starts out with Carmella. She ends up, obviously, Carmella, Naomi, Sonya Deville, which is a really odd choice, Asuka. And I'm saying to myself, and Charlotte Flair. Charlotte Flair's not there. Instead, Mandy Rose comes out. And Mandy Rose basically says, look, I mean, I'm happy for Sonya. But I'd love to know how you picked her over me when I'm the one who threw her out of the Battle Royal. And then she gets in and basically cuts down everybody. When she gets to Naomi, she makes a weird, I'm not really sure what it's supposed to mean, reference to whether her husband is still feeling the glow. And Naomi just lambastes her, and the fight is on. And Sonya Deville, oddly, sort of gets between Mandy Rose and the rest and says, what are you doing? You know, why are you doing that? And Mandy Rose kind of backs off. So my assumption is this absolution thing is over. We're probably going to get a very brief Mandy Rose feud with Naomi, and then we're going to probably get Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose. Mandy Rose got on the mic. She's not bad on the mic. She's not great, but she's not bad. We'll see where this leads. I will say this. This is not a good team, and it shows you the weakness of the SmackDown division. Okay, Charlotte, who wasn't there? I don't know. Mandy Rose didn't say I tied her up backstage. I'm not sure why she wasn't there. Charlotte's a good choice. Asuka's a good choice. Naomi is a good choice. The other two girls, Sonya Deville has proven nothing. She's going to be the first person out. And Carmella right now, despite the fact that I really like her and I really think she's got a lot of talent, her role now is a comedy sidekick to R-Truth, and she's just not going to be one of these world beaters. What's she going to do? Is she going to go up there against who? Who's she going to pin at in Raw? Raw's got a much more dominant team. Even though we don't even know who they are, we can assume. And they're going to have a much more dominant team. Except for maybe Asuka. So I'm looking at the team, and I'm saying, not really that interested in it. I'm more interested, Mike, in what they're going to be pulling here with Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose.
Right, and we know that for the longest time they've been a heel, while Paige, as a general manager, has been a face. Now, I'm not saying they're going to turn, they're going to turn Paige, but one of the end goal may be to put these two girls together in some sort of a feud. I mean, it would also make sense that, Sonya Deville at some point would end up going to Raw, maybe doing a program with Ronda Rousey. But again, that's somewhere that's neither here nor there right now. But yeah, I don't know what, and I'll do like that line that Mandy Rose came out and said, "I'm a blonde. I'm just not the blonde you expected."
Right, but I didn't like the fact that there was no explanation of where the hell is Charlotte Flair. Her music hit. Who the hell pumped her music if she wasn't waiting in, position to walk out? You have to explain where Charlotte Flair is. If Charlotte Flair came out and said, okay, well, she hit me in the head backstage or something, okay. We didn't see Charlotte Flair. So I don't know what the hell we're supposed to assume from that. I really don't. But at least there was a branch on the tree in announcing the women's division, and that is there's some tension between former teammates, and there's some tension between one of the members and a girl who was left out, and we'll see what ends up happening with that. We then get Rey Mysterio versus Almas, and for the people who doubted me when I said Almas getting beaten by AJ Styles when he first came in was a bad thing, everyone said, oh no, he gave him a great fight and he was right. He's right in the mix. And didn't you read that Vince McMahon's really high on him? Who's he beaten since? Who's he beaten since? Remember the guy who told you this was a horrible thing and it does not count because you lose, just because you lose to the champion. Doesn't mean, oh, well, you're getting a big rub and a big push. I said, when you make a debut like Almas did, beats a couple of people, and then right to the top to AJ Styles and taps out. That doesn't mean you're getting a big push. All I read was, oh, Vince is very high on him. The backstage are very high on Almas. They wanted to put him in there with a top guy to see how he'd look with a top guy, and he passed with flying colors, and you're going to see Almas now get this big, big push. Who'd he beat, Rusev? Who apparently isn't even on the Survivor Series team? Who'd he beat? He's lost to everybody. And now he's lost to Rey. And Almas is, the shine's coming off of Almas because he doesn't look like a world beater. He looks like a guy who, if he's in the middle of the pack, he has a chance to win. But any of the top tier guys, forget it. He's not winning. That's what he looks like. And I'm the guy who warned you that don't listen to the WWE when they say, oh, we put Almas in there against AJ Styles just to get the rub, to see how he, perform with a champion. And he came through with flying colors and he's due for a big push and we're high on him. I told you then, they're full of shit. They're going to throw him away. He's going to end up being this guy who loses, gives a tough fight, but loses to everybody, at least in the top five. And there you go. Rey Mysterio literally just walks in this federation and says, I'm beating everybody. Can't beat The Miz, but he can beat Almas. Now, I understand you don't want Almas on the team and you want Rey, and you do want Rey. But why do you have to put him against Almas? Put him against someone else then. Randy Orton wasn't even mentioned. Are you going to tell me that Randy Orton wasn't considered to be on the Survivor Series team? How come he didn't say, hey, Randy Orton is Rey Mysterio will fight and the winner will be, on the team or something? That would have been awesome. And it would have gave Randy Orton a reason if he lost again. To hit him with the RKO. Maybe something will come of this. I don't know. We got a ways to the Survivor Series. Maybe Rey will be put out of it by Randy Orton. I don't know what's going to happen. What I do know is this was not good for Almas. It doesn't bode well. And I warned everybody, Mike, when this crap first started happening, and that's why I say the same thing with Nikki Cross. When you start to very early in your WWE career, you start to take losses, especially submission losses. It usually doesn't bode well.
Right. And look, they basically did the same thing with Sanity when they brought them up, you know, so, I mean, it shouldn't surprise you that they're doing it over and over and over again. At least the recent history states that they've done that type of crap over and over and over again. So it shouldn't surprise you, but you know, the match in and of itself was a halfway decent match. We knew who was winning, but it was a halfway decent match. And, you know, there were a couple times where, you know, he went for his finish, the 619, and he either got punched or he got caught or something like that, or got sidestepped by Almas. I like that. I like those false finishes, you know.
I just can't help thinking, Mike, that it would have been much more fun if somehow Randy Orton cost Rey Mysterio the ability to be on the Survivor Series team. Because then that could have had ramifications where a guy like Shane, who's good on the mic, or Daniel Bryan, who's good on the mic, could have said, you know, this could cost us. Or The Miz could have been like, oh, what do you know? I told you Rey Mysterio wasn't the guy. And Daniel Bryan could have said, well, look what happened. Randy Orton could have, in effect, have hurt the Survivor Series team. He's not a team player. Randy Orton's a moron. I vote we keep Randy Orton out of any of this. And then The Miz could have said, well, okay, based on the fact that he is kind of hot-tempered and he did interfere in the match and maybe he's not a team player, you're right, we'll keep him out. But my guy Almas is in there. Then if you had Almas put on a really good performance, stay till near the end of the Survivor Series, that could have helped him. Rey don't need the help. Rey don't need the help. So now you got Rey in a really good feud with Randy Orton over the fact that he was cost a Survivor Series position. Randy Orton now has the reputation of, even The Miz says, yeah, keep him off the Survivor Series team. He's a little out there. And Almas gets in the position where he can highlight his skills in the Survivor Series. I just think that's a much better option. No, you don't get the name recognition. You don't get, wow, Rey Mysterio is in it. But Rey would probably end up fighting Orton or something at it. It was a good match, though, Todd. I mean, the fans were chanting, this is awesome, even though I don't think it really was all that awesome.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was a good match, but it wasn't an awesome match. It was an okay match, but it is what it is on that.
Yeah, I don't know, Mike. I just think that I would have played it the other way. I would have played Almas gets the victory thanks to Randy Orton's interference, and then we could have had that big controversy.
Right. And, you know, Miz would have said, I know you wanted him. And, you know, that like you said, I know you wanted him. And he would have been a good choice. And we both can agree that we're not going to give it to Randy Orton. You know,
right.
Too hot-tempered and all that crap. And Daniel Bryan said, you're right, and you're right. We're not going to give it to Randy Orton. And like you said, it would have set up that feud with him and Randy, with Rey and Randy Orton. And then you could have had, you know, him almost fight somebody else to get, because when's the Survivor Series? You know,
we got a while, a couple
three,
weeks,
weeks,
Yeah.
You could have him fight, you could have almost fight somebody else that's probably going nowhere as another pick, and Almas wins the spot by beating the other guy.
Right. I would have rather seen Almas go ahead and fight like Jeff Hardy. That would have been a more even match. Almas against Jeff Hardy, and then Samoa Joe would have to fight somebody else. Maybe Rusev, you know, because that would make sense. You'd say, well, Samoa Joe and Rusev, wow, you know, that'll be a great match. Because how come they're not even thinking about Rusev? First, they don't think about Randy Orton, and you say, well, maybe they'll agree he's not a team player. Good. Okay. But you didn't think about Rusev? Wow. But you did think about Jeff Hardy. So then, of course, Daniel Bryan backstage says, okay, well, we're going to give my pick, and my pick is Jeff Hardy. Who are you going to have go up against him? The Miz brings out Samoa Joe, who had basically just attacked Daniel Bryan last week. Daniel Bryan makes a face at him, basically, and he says, look, you know, I'm a shoo-in, basically. He leaves. He's going to kill Hardy. And the Miz is just smiling at him and says, you know, you're going to be okay with him, right? If he wins, you're going to be okay with him. I mean, he did choke you out. And Daniel Bryan says, yeah, you know, I'm going to be okay with him, but it doesn't matter because Jeff Hardy's going to win. Well, the beauty of this match is both of these guys are at ringside doing commentary. And they're more entertaining than any of the other commentators put together. And they're going back and forth pretty good. And the Miz brings up, when Daniel Bryan says, well, what have you done team-wise? You know, you don't do anything with the team. And he says, what are you talking about? I had the Miztourage, I had Mizdow. He brought up Mizdow. I had the Miztourage, I had Mizdow. And he says, oh, yeah, you're good at just telling people what to do. That's not teamwork. That's just you keeping somebody under your thumb. And he says, well, how about the Survivor Series? I led a team to victory at Survivor Series. And you're saying, look, they're hearkening back to WWE history now. They don't think the fans are dumb. They're bringing up these things, and fans who have stuck with it for this long say they appreciate it and say that he's right. The Miz is right. The Miz is absolutely right in this. Daniel Bryan is not right about this. And then Daniel Bryan, the best the line of the night, as far as I'm concerned, is Daniel Bryan acknowledges, look, yeah, Samoa Joe choked me out after I lost. And I acknowledge I lost. I was not as good as AJ Styles that night. Simple as that. I'm not on AJ Styles' level right now. To which The Miz says, you haven't been on a level since you got here, since you got back from your injury. Unlike me, you haven't been anywhere near the Daniel Bryan. And Bryan says, you're right. You're absolutely right. I haven't been. And I'm working on it. I have not reached that level yet. There's no question about it. And there's a good interaction between them. I mean, a really solid interaction. But what now I see that I did not see before in any of the other skits that they did is Daniel Bryan is losing his patience. Daniel Bryan is now realizing not everything I say is right. As a matter of fact, I keep getting shot down. And I'm starting to get aggravated. And then when his choice, Jeff Hardy, runs through a lackluster match, Jeff Hardy's career in the WWE is coming to a close. He runs through a lackluster match, loses. You can see that Daniel Bryan's visibly upset. And he's upset not so much because Jeff Hardy lost as his pick lost. He's allowing that to interject itself in. And all night long, and I don't know whether it was planned that way or The Miz is just that good, Daniel Bryan would bring up a point when Corey Graves asks him something about himself personally. The Miz is answering the question, and Daniel Bryan says, I'll leave it to you. We're fighting here to see who's going to be the last member of this team, and you're making it all about you. You're talking about yourself out here. Typical Miz. And The Miz says, what are you talking about? He asked me a question. I'm answering the question. Which is true. So Daniel Bryan keeps getting shot down on the microphone. Then he's shot down when his choice loses. Then Samoa Joe gets out of the ring and tries to intimidate Daniel Bryan. And Bryan takes the first swing. The Miz says, what are you doing? What are you doing? He slides in the ring. He pulls Daniel Bryan off. He has the yes lock on Samoa Joe. He pulls Daniel Bryan off. Daniel Bryan hesitates for a moment as if he's saying, yeah, you're right, I lost my temper. And then he attacks The Miz. And then Shane runs in to try to prevent it. And supposedly he doesn't know who it is. He judo flips Shane. And then leaves with a very sour expression on his face. And I can't help but think, we may be seeing Daniel Bryan as the guy who flips. We may be seeing Daniel Bryan as the guy who says, I haven't lived up to my potential. I've let myself down. I've let myself get into these ridiculous feuds with these idiots, and I'm done with this nonsense. I mean, his wife technically turned heel. You may see Daniel Bryan flip. Now, he's not going to do it right away. He's not going to do it before the Survivor Series, but there could be something happening at the Survivor Series with Daniel Bryan. I don't think it's going to be Shane, because Shane is irrelevant. What's he going to do? If Shane was going to turn heel, there would be no way Shane would have came out last night and say, I know I'm not the best in the world, and whatever I did because I wanted SmackDown to have the cup. And he certainly wouldn't have picked Daniel Bryan as the team captain right away. And The Miz certainly would have came out and gave Shane a hard time. So I don't think Shane's turning. And from everything I see with The Miz, it doesn't look like he's going in that direction at all. It looks like he's more going toward the middle of being a face. So maybe it's Daniel Bryan whose frustration is going to make him snap. It's very possible. Now, maybe none of this happens. Maybe this is all drama built up for the Survivor Series, where Daniel Bryan will finally explode and be the sole survivor, and he'll reach that moment where he says, now I'm the Daniel Bryan everybody remembers. Maybe The Miz is bluffing being a nice guy, and he's going to sell out the Survivor Series and move to Raw. Maybe he's in Raw's back pocket. I don't know. But if I was a betting man, by the body language and the facial expressions and the dialogue that I heard on Tuesday, I'm led to believe that Daniel Bryan is getting very frustrated storyline-wise with not winning much. He's getting frustrated by getting shot down with his ideas and his theories. And when he tries to make a point, he gets shot down and somebody makes a better point. And he was nominated the captain, and then it was taken away from him. And, oh, now you're the co-captain. His choices lose. He seems irritated. And it could lead to something, Mike. That's the way I'm looking at it anyway.
This reminds me of what WCW was doing with Chris Jericho before he left to come to the WWE. Remember? He was losing, and then he snaps a couple of times and starts throwing around chairs and hitting ring posts with chairs and just, and you could tell in his interviews, in his promos that he had snapped, and that's when they turned him heel. That's what this looks like with Daniel Bryan. You know, he's frustrated that he couldn't get the job done against AJ Styles. AJ was better than him at that point. And then now his pick, like you said, his pick loses and all that stuff. It might be hard for them to turn him heel because that yes movement, that yes thing is, well, it's going to be hard to have him stop doing it because the fans are going to want to do that. I mean,
they're
basically cheering him, you know?
I agree. You'd have to have him do something dramatic. The only way I feel that Daniel Bryan would ever be able to get over as a heel is if he literally turned his back on the whole SmackDown. Maybe you would have him like a Bret Hart, where if he went to Raw, he's a good guy, but the SmackDown people think he's a bad guy. Like Bret was a good guy in Canada, but bad guy in the United States. Where you'd say he's the enemy of SmackDown. He gave SmackDown the middle finger. He said, F you to Shane, F you to The Miz, F you to all you people over there. This is not the superior brand. To which, of course, Shane could say, well, when Daniel Bryan couldn't cut it on SmackDown, look where he ran to the weaker show where he has a better chance of cutting it. You know, there's things you could do there if that's what you wanted to do, but then you'd have to have inter-brand feuding, which I don't know if they want to do that. What I do know is it's far more likely that Daniel Bryan is turning heel than Shane McMahon. And at one point, I thought they want to get to The Miz and Daniel Bryan one more time. But now I'm starting to think, you know, with WrestleMania around the corner, Shane McMahon's going to have an opponent. And I'm beginning to wonder if that's not going to be Daniel Bryan. I'm really beginning to wonder. Because there is a story to be told there that never really got fully told. And if they want to harken back to that, you could play off that. So my takeaway on SmackDown is it was intriguing. There was a lot of moments where it makes me go, I wonder what that means. Where they're just smiling at each other. And then Daniel Bryan's like, I agree with The Miz. How is it that I agree with The Miz? And what I'm seeing is, and maybe I'm overthinking it, but what I'm seeing is Daniel Bryan understanding The Miz's philosophies a little more than he thinks he should. And maybe The Miz starting to realize Daniel Bryan isn't as dumb as he thought he was or as incapable as he thought he was. And they're kind of meeting in the middle, which is a kind of a weird way if you're going to flip both guys. I see a little bit of Daniel Bryan's point of view as The Miz, so he's moving toward the good guy side a little bit. And Daniel Bryan saying, I'm agreeing with The Miz here. Maybe I should be a little more selfish and whatever. He's getting over and he's moving more toward the heel. It's a very interesting way of doing things. And it caught my interest. SmackDown this week to me was a very interesting show. And it wasn't really because of the matches. The New Day and the Usos had a good match. So I'll give credit where it's due. Rey Mysterio and Almas had a decent match. Not the quality they could pull off, but a decent match. Samoa Joe and Jeff Hardy, it's almost impossible at this point to have a really good match with Jeff Hardy. It's almost impossible. He just doesn't seem like he's into it anymore. Becky Lynch and Nikki Cross, I totally disagree with the outcome of. I think it was a wasted debut and a ridiculous attempt, I guess, to either make the fans cheer Becky more or make her boo her more. Maybe the powers that be thought, well, if we introduce Nikki Cross and Becky wins, fans will be upset at the booking and they'll blame Becky. No, we blame you. Or maybe they thought, well, we'll put her against a heel because technically Sanity's her heels and that'll make them cheer Becky more. Well, I don't know if that worked either. They're not cheering Becky because she beat Nikki Cross. They're cheering Becky because she's exciting to watch and she's really good on the mic and she's lit a fire under the women's division. I don't know where they're going with that. That was a bad mistake. That was a blunder. And that's going to cost them in my rating because up to this point, had the Becky Lynch, Nikki Cross match ended with Becky Lynch taking her belt and walking out the door, saying, I don't have any obligation to fight her, there's a very good chance this would have been an A-plus show because I can't really pick on anything else. Yeah, the way Rey Mysterio and Almas, you could have done the thing with Randy Orton. But obviously they don't want Almas in the Survivor Series. So if they don't want Almas in the Survivor Series, then you did what you could. I may disagree personally with that, but I won't take anything off the rating for it. But this I have to, because you cannot debut a girl and make her tap out. I don't care if it's the champion. This is what you did with Almas, and where's Almas's career? And Almas had a couple of victories before he tapped out. Nikki Cross had zero. To people who don't watch NXT, that's the first time they've seen her. And she's a bum. So for that reason, I have to give it a B+. I take a one whole grade off of it. It would have been an A+ show. One of my rare A+s. Had that not happened. But I just think that's a terrible waste of Nikki Cross and a horrible booking decision. And it did nothing to help Becky Lynch and everything in the world to hurt Nikki Cross. So it's just a dumb, dumb decision. So I'm giving it a B+, Mike. What's your thoughts?
I would have given it a B+, but I didn't. I think the fact that and we didn't mention this, but the Nakamura promo, I really enjoyed that. Was weird, but I enjoyed it. So I'm going to go ahead and give it an A-.
Okay. I liked the Nakamura promo. I didn't like the fact that he said one of your friends had to go away. That's a poor choice of words, and I don't like it. But even if it was a good promo, which I do think it was evened out by AJ Styles' horrible promo that looked like he was reading it off the wall or a teleprompter. So I have to go one grade lower than that. So we got an A minus and a B plus. Todd, where you at?
I gotta go with you. I gotta go with an A minus till end.
Okay, so that's going with Mike, actually. So we got two A minuses and a B plus. Pretty close. This is was a pretty good SmackDown. Why was it a pretty good SmackDown? Because we got a logical storyline. Two co-captains are attempting to pick their teams. They are not very comfortable with one another. As a matter of fact, they're mortal enemies. But they have one mutual thing in common. They want SmackDown to win. And they start to realize maybe we have more in common than we thought. And while they get snarky at each other and bicker back and forth, at the end, The Miz didn't want to see Daniel Bryan and Samoa Joe fight because one of them could have got hurt and that could jeopardize the team. So The Miz actually does a face thing and says, let me break this up. He didn't attack Daniel Bryan. And Samoa Joe and him go beating on Bryan. He separated them and said to Daniel Bryan, what are you doing? That's your teammate. We can't have this. And instead, Daniel Bryan attacks him. And then inadvertently, supposedly, attacks Shane McMahon. But there was no look of shock on Daniel Bryan's face when he saw it was Shane McMahon. He wasn't like, oh, my God, what did I do? He didn't go over and say, Shane, I'm sorry. I thought that was Samoa Joe. Stormed out. So we have an interesting dichotomy going on here. And for that reason, I found it very entertaining. I thought they did an excellent job. The matches themselves ranged from good to so-so. But it goes to show you how a continuing theme in a storyline can help the matches mean something and bolster even mediocre matches to better than mediocre. So I thought overall, Mike, it was a very entertaining show.
It was a very entertaining show. And look, I mean, I even like the fact that she brought up that Becky Lynch, kind of weird, but she did bring up they showed the interview with her, with Ronda, and she talking about her being sort of a clown. And Becky Lynch had to bring the fact that, oh, yeah, I did train as a clown, but that's not me right now. You know, basically, that's what she said. That's not me right now. And you know what she is. And you know, now, granted, that training as a clown at some point down the line, if they want her at some point down the line, Becky Lynch, to be a comedy person, a pseudo comedy person, she can do it because she has that training, you know, that type of stuff. But right now, I did enjoy her referring back to all the jobs she's had, you know. That all
not only that, but they did it all episode, Mike. They had The Miz refer back to an ancient Survivor Series match. They had him refer back to Mizdow, for God's sake. So that's a good step forward, in my opinion, Mike.
It really is. And the fact that, I mean, Mizdow, the Miztourage, you know, I mean, they treated, I mean, and we've talked about that poll that says the average age of your wrestling fans is what, 45, 50 years old, whatever it is.
Yep.
And this show treated us like the average age of the fans is that age, you know?
What's even better, Mike, is it didn't treat the fans like they were stupid, because even if you're 21 and you started watching wrestling at 19, you certainly could have watched your old WWE stuff and said, oh, that Mizdow thing was funny. Oh, I remember this part of the whatever. You could have done your past history. That's like a baseball fan saying, well, I wasn't born to see Babe Ruth, so I don't know who he was. Of course you know who he is. Of course you know what he did if you're a baseball fan. So there is no real excuse for wrestling fans to say, well, I didn't, I'm 19, I don't know that crap. Well, you're 19, you know who Babe Ruth is, right? You know who Wilt Chamberlain is, right? You know, if you're a basketball fan, and I'm not alive then either, but there's no excuse for that. You know who the Beatles are, right? Even if you weren't alive when they were huge. So, I mean, there's no excuse for that. And for both of those guys and Becky Lynch to an extent to go back a ways in their history and not be afraid to reference things that maybe some fans, if you're 9 or 10, say, I don't know what he means. Because they're not afraid to do that, Mike, it makes me think they are, at least these particular people, are not considering wrestling fans stupid.
That's right. And that's what we as wrestling fans want, that they don't, at least the ones that have been around a while, I mean, at least the ones that are our age, or maybe a little bit younger, maybe in their 30s, that were cogent throughout the Attitude Era, you know. They may have been in their mid-teens or whatever, but they were cogent enough to know what was going on then, you know. And they know about Steve Austin, and they know about The Rock, and they know about all this stuff. They're not the 9-year-olds of today, you know.
Right, but I cut slack. If you're 9, 10, 11 years old, you probably don't have a lot of time for going back to the WWE Network and watching matches. But if you're an 18, 19, 20-year-old, 25-year-old fan, you better know about Steve Austin and the Attitude Era. You better know about Bruno Sammartino. You better. I do. I know about Bruno Sammartino. I wasn't alive to see his title reigns. I know. I got news for you. I know about Buddy Rogers. I certainly wasn't alive to see his title reigns. Because if you love a sport, you go back and you study the history of the sport. And you watch some of the older things and you see how it's transpired over the years. So, yeah, if you're 10 years old and you're saying, what do they mean, Ms. Dow? Maybe I get it. And I cut you some slack. You're 10 years old. If you're 20 years old, you don't know who Ms. Dow is. Then you're probably a really casual fan. And what I like is that The Miz automatically says, I'm not playing to the casual fan. I'm playing to the hardcore fan. I'm playing to the fan who's been here a while or has done their homework, whether they're 19 or they're 29, 39, 49. I'm playing to that fan. Because when they play to that fan, Mike, they are basically saying, we realize you guys know your stuff.
Yes, and that's what's been lacking lately, that they haven't been playing to those type of fans. They've been playing to the 9, 10, 11-year-old fans that,
right,
really, like you said, really don't have the time to go and watch old Hacksaw Jim Duggan matches The WWE Network, you can go on. I will bet you can go on and get not only the old WWF matches, but the old, you know, big time wrestling and all that stuff is there. Even WCCW, you know.
You can go back into the Smoky Mountain. You can do it all. I have. But even before there was a WWE Network, I did. Because I love wrestling, so I wanted to know its history. I've always watched old matches and wanted to know different territories people came from and what they were like down there and et cetera, you know. And when you are that type of fan, you appreciate when the wrestlers, the workers, play up to that and say, I know there's a lot of you guys out there. I know not everybody just casually watches wrestling. So I can reference my Survivor Series team and you'll say, that's right, because I forgot about it. And when The Miz referenced it, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. And when you get that kind of reaction, then you're like, now I'm believing this whole thing. Now I'm believing this is a legitimate argument, because why would The Miz reference something that dated if it was scripted? So then you start to think this is a legitimate argument and it feels real. So I can't tell you how impressed I was with Daniel Bryan and The Miz's work on Tuesday night. Both of those guys were stellar. Both of those guys were brilliant. Both of those guys embody what professional wrestling is supposed to be. And regardless of how you feel about The Miz in the ring, I'm here to tell you both of those guys can get it done in the ring. Because while The Miz is not Daniel Bryan athletically, The Miz psychologically can pull off a great, great match. The Miz can make you care about a match. And that's very important. If you don't think that's important, I would rather see a Miz match any day than a five-star Japanese athlete who you're just saying, well, there's no storyline. They're just going to do their moves. But they got great moves. Okay, well, I don't care who wins, though. So if I don't care who wins, there's really no point in me watching it. Just to say, ooh-ah, look at that move. Ooh-ah, look at that move. That gets old, like the third time you watch them. But The Miz doesn't get old. Because he's almost like the New Day. He's constantly tweaking and refining and tweaking and refining. And you're like, well, yeah, it's starting to get stale, but then he added this, or they added that, or then this happened, or that happened. It's a constant refreshing process, Mike. And The Miz and Daniel Bryan are both really good at it.
Right. And look, this whole thing with him turning, you know, he kind of a pseudo face. Almost started the moment that Maurice announced that they were having a baby. Because you know when somebody does that and they announce it and they let them announce it, that something's up, you know, because you're not going to boo somebody. You're not going to totally boo somebody or totally hate on somebody that's coming back from their wife having a baby.
Right, and you also got to take into consideration the WWE was beginning to realize that no matter what The Miz did, whether Maurice handed him brass knuckles, whether he crapped on the town, whether he did whatever the hell he was going to do on the mic, fans were cheering him because he's entertaining. And fans were saying, I like this guy because he's entertaining me, much like Elias. They were cheering Elias not because he's wonderful in the ring, because he's not. They're cheering Elias because they're saying, this guy is entertaining. I enjoy being entertained by this guy. So it doesn't matter whether he's picking on our town or our sports team or whoever. It doesn't matter whether he's the bad guy or the good guy. I'm cheering him because he's one of the people I pay my money to see, and he's doing a good job of entertaining me. And that's what The Miz was getting. That's the reaction he was getting. So I think the WWE realized that and said, we may have to downplay The Miz being this horrible heel. Because now they're starting to go with the types of heel, and I want to tell a brief story here that I found out that you guys may be interested in. They want to go with the type of heel like Drew McIntyre ended up being on Raw. Now, here you have Drew McIntyre giving Kurt Angle his leg, saying, come on, tap me out, Kurt. You're an Olympic gold medalist, right? Let's see that famous leg lock. You ain't got it anymore, Kurt. You should have retired a long time ago. You're disgracing your family. You're disgracing your Olympic gold medals. You're disgracing yourself. You're a joke. I'm giving you my leg and you can't do it. Then, you gave me an angle slam? It didn't pin me. Let me give you mine. I can do what you do. You're a has-been. I'm the future. You're a has-been. And at the end, he wins and says, I knew it. I told you. You're a has-been. And everybody in that arena says, yeah, Drew McIntyre, he's not somebody you want to cheer. He's a jerk. You know, Kurt Angle was humiliated in the ring. Nobody deserves that. Kurt Angle may be getting a little older, but man, he put his heart and soul in this company, and he's achieved more than Drew McIntyre will ever achieve in his lifetime as far as legitimate athletics. And for Drew McIntyre to do that is a shit move. So let me tell you a story. Guess who wrote that angle? Kurt Angle. Because Kurt Angle and Drew McIntyre are very good friends, and Kurt Angle thinks that Drew McIntyre is the future. And Kurt Angle said something big has to happen with Drew. And he gave Drew McIntyre this idea and said, how about if you do this? Because this is really going to get you over with some heat, I think. That's professional wrestling, folks. That's the way it goes. Now, Drew McIntyre, after doing what he did in the ring on Monday night, is probably backstage kissing Kurt Angle's ring, saying, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you for giving me that opportunity, for giving me that push, for believing in me enough to say, I'm willing to do this, and I'm Kurt Angle. Okay? Think Hulk Hogan's going to do that for somebody? Think the Ultimate Warrior would have ever done that for somebody? And yeah, I put Kurt Angle in that category. They wouldn't have done that for anybody. Think Brock Lesnar's going to ever do that for somebody? Kurt Angle, knowing my in-ring time is very limited, picks a guy he likes, picks a guy he thinks can really add to the WWE's roster, and says, we got to get him over, and I'm the guy to do it, and I'll, not only am I okay with it, I'm the guy who wrote it. I wrote myself to be humiliated and embarrassed and undermined by this guy so he can come out looking like a giant heel. That's the heels the WWE is moving more toward. And they're going now, apparently taking a step back with these heels that you cheer. And they've done what they had to do with Elias, which was a correct move. And it looks like they're moving that way toward The Miz. That's probably a good sign, Mike.
That is a good sign. And they've kind of moved that way with Becky Lynch. Because,
yep, and they probably will with KO when he comes back.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, and you mentioned these guys that do this type of stuff. I mean, I remember a whole bunch of times that Sting, when he was in TNA, did that type of stuff where he would do that type where he shouldn't have lost to somebody, but he did that type of stuff. And Ric Flair had a habit of doing that stuff coming down to the end of his career, you know.
Yeah, because that is pro wrestling. I mean, you give back. At the end of the day, you give back. Hulk Hogan's not going to give back. Brock Lesnar's not going to give back. The Ultimate Warrior wasn't the guy who was going to give back. There are certain guys that's just not their metabolism. They're going to be a star till the day they die. You know, you're not going to see Shawn Michaels trudge out there and say, I will have a heel like Drew McIntyre humiliate me, take my super kick and get up, and then give me his super kick and pin me and tell me I'm a has-been, I'm a loser. I should have retired a long time ago. I'm disgracing my legend and all that stuff. Shawn Michaels would not do that. Triple H is not going to do that either. There's a lot of guys in high-ranking positions, and the WWE is not going to do that. So you got to give all the credit in the world to Kurt Angle, who certainly did not have to do that. No one told him he had to do it. This is the guy who wrote it. No one told him he had to do it. Kurt Angle picked a guy and said, I like Drew McIntyre. He's a friend of mine. I want to get him over. And the best way to get him over is not to just beat me by cheating. Oh, I would have beaten Drew McIntyre, but Drew McIntyre did this without the referee's knowledge or outside interference. No. Kurt Angle was right and said, no, if we're going to move toward a direction of heels being heels, Drew McIntyre has to totally humiliate me tonight. Totally embarrass me. Put me on the shelf. And then he'll be the guy that retires Kurt Angle probably, or maybe Kurt will have a match or two more. I don't know. But, Mike, that's true dedication to the sport.
That is true dedication to the sport. And that comes from a guy that it took him a while to get it.
Oh, boy,
you know,
did it.
It took him. I mean, it took Kurt Angle how long to get it? You know, he didn't understand it at first, and we've talked about it, and you've talked about this,
yeah.
You know, with all the pyro and all that stuff, and all that stuff, you know. And he didn't understand it at first, but he got
it. Kurt Angle was the guy who stormed out of an ECW event saying, if you use my name in this broadcast, I will sue you. Because this is not wrestling. This is garbage. Kurt Angle walked out of an ECW broadcast so irate and upset about what he saw that he threatened that they had to take his name off everything. He went from that guy who did not understand anything about pro wrestling or the way you psychologically manipulate the fans to the guy who was afraid of his own pyro when he thought The Undertaker was coming after him and gave everybody silver badges but himself a gold badge when he was forming a posse. Kurt Angle finally got it. It took him a minute. But man, now he's put everybody to shame because like I told you, there are guys who get it and have always got it, like Hulk Hogan, who would never do this. Do you think Hulk Hogan's getting in that ring and let's say Drew McIntyre fights Hulk Hogan or Braun Strowman fights Hulk Hogan, do you think Braun Strowman is going to be allowed to dominate Hulk Hogan, kick out of his leg drop, tell him you're a has-been, you're a loser, you're a disgrace, your legend is done, you should have retired a long time ago, and then clean pin him or make him tap? Bullshit. That's never happening because Hogan won't allow it. Simple as that. Shawn Michaels, not going to happen. Brock Lesnar, it's not going to happen. I'm not saying they won't lose, but they're not going to have that happen to them. They'll come up with, well, I'll lose, but he's got to throw water on me and hit me with an electric cattle prod, and I'll lose, but somebody's got to come down and run me over with a Sherman tank. No. Kurt Angle just lost. And you know what the ironic thing is? While Drew McIntyre is telling him how he lost all of his dignity and he lost all of his self-respect, what he's really saying to Kurt Angle is, man, you got it. You got this. You have my respect. You have my ultimate respect. It's amazing how wrestling works. It's a very weird business. But it's all about being able to understand it and not having that big of an ego and realizing you have to, at some point, bad things have to happen to good guys for the bad guys to thrive. And eventually, the bad guys get what's coming to them. It's a formula that is as simple as day and night. The bad guys have their fun. They humiliate, embarrass, attack, assault, laugh it up, have a great time at the expense of the baby faces who are brave and try to fight back but cannot seem to steer the ship. But then comes that one moment. And when that one moment comes, it can't be in the form of, well, the heel really didn't kind of lose. The referee didn't see his shoulder was up or his foot was up. No, no. The heel has to finally eat it and suffer that one big, huge loss where they say, all the shit I did, it didn't matter. He beat me anyway. You always have to have that moment. Eventually, every bad guy has their comeuppance where you say, well, they got what was coming to them eventually. Sometimes it's 3 weeks. Sometimes it's 3 years. But at the end of the day, that's the wrestling strategy. The good guys have to eat the shit 90% of the time. But then that 10% of the time when the bad guy's time has come, they get what's coming to them. It's just a very, very simple psychology, Mike.
It really is. I mean, think about this. We talk about it, them eating their shit. But remember, think about this. Kind of they want Samoa Joe to be a bad guy, right? Well,
yeah.
What happened in that match? He thought he won, but the guy didn't see the tap out. And he reacted like he won, and that's what a bad guy would have done, you know. And he tapped out. Well, I didn't see it, you know. That's
right.
That's what had happened. And look. You know who put the. You know who's the first guy to put the Miz over? Ric Flair.
That's right. You're absolutely correct. Now, we could argue about the Samoa Joe thing by saying Samoa Joe got his comeuppance, but it was really too quick. Samoa Joe should have had 3 or 4 feuds where he got over on lesser guys and really played up that I can do what I want and nobody can stop me until he got to AJ Styles. If this had been 4.5 months of Samoa Joe being a total dick, totally humiliating and embarrassing the faces, taking it way too far, having the announcer say, how dare he say the things he says and does what he does, and people say, oh, he's backing it up, though. He's giving these guys a chance to stop him, and they can't stop him. And then he goes a little too far with AJ Styles, and that's the time he eats it. Then that works. That's perfect wrestling psychology. The reason it wasn't as satisfying as it should have been, Mike, it wasn't built up long enough.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was too soon. There have been times, you remember all those matches between Sting and Ric Flair where Ric Flair would always get over on Sting and always get over on him and always get over on him. And then all of a sudden, And then all of a sudden something would happen and Sting would get over on him. And that would be somewhat the end of the feud at that point. But that's how things would and we basically compared the Miz to Ric Flair, you know, at times. And especially because one of his moves is the figure four. But basically Ric Flair okayed the Miz to use the figure four, even though his daughter uses it as her finisher. But he basically said, go ahead and use it. And that was another way that Ric Flair kind of put the Miz over, you know?
No question. And Ric Flair likes the Miz, and that's good enough for me, because Ric Flair is one of the best wrestlers ever walked the face of the planet. And, of course, the Miz is not Ric Flair. Not in the ring. But I tell you what, the Miz is pretty close to Ric Flair outside the ring as far as his ability to talk and sell a fight and all those type of things. Now, I know we got off the subject of SmackDown, but I want to end this broadcast with a story that I think probably Mike will remember and probably Todd will too. Maybe some of you guys out there listening that will illustrate what I mean when I say wrestling has to take you on that journey where the bad guys dominate for so long. When Kevin Sullivan, as a devil worshiper, that was his gimmick, was running rampant down in Florida Championship Wrestling. There came a time they were going to have a match on Christmas Eve. Dusty Rhodes versus Kevin Sullivan. I believe it was Kevin Sullivan. Might have been the Purple Haze or somebody from his party. But either way, it was Dusty Rhodes standing up for the red, white, and blue and, you know, whatever. And they built this match and built this match and built this match to be, this is where the bad guys get theirs. Not only is it Christmas Eve, and you want to send the fans home happy, but Kevin Sullivan had been running wild. Nobody had been able to stop him. He'd done so many bad things to so many people that people were just like, I can't take it anymore. During the match, they had Santa Clauses there and stuff because it was Christmas Eve and there had some people dressed as Santa Clauses to take pictures with kids and things. A Santa Claus appears and he's throwing out presents to the crowd and stuff. And as he's passing by, I think it was a steel cage match, and as he's passing by, he just happens to throw in an object that is used by the bad guy. Boom. Hits Dusty Rhodes with it. 1, 2, 3. Turns out the Santa Claus is one of Kevin Sullivan's devil worshippers in disguise. And he passed him a foreign object without the referee seeing. Every fan went home saying, the son of a bitch on Christmas Eve ruined what we knew was going to be the ultimate victory of Dusty Rhodes. And that made the victory that he got later all that much sweeter. Because you had to wait for it, and you said, what is going to stop him? Every time we think, this is it. It's not it. And all the while, they were taking you on that psychological journey. And when Kevin Sullivan finally got beat decisively and clean, and had to eat it, everybody felt relieved. Everybody left the arena that night saying, yes! I was there when Kevin Sullivan got what was coming to him, and boy, did he ever get what was coming to him. When you can send a crowd home with that kind of elation based upon who won and lost, you did your job as a professional wrestler and as a writer for professional wrestling. When fans walking out the door saying, the armbar looked sloppy, and I didn't like the way they did the plancha, and I really thought that the outfit was better last week, and you didn't do your job. You didn't do your job at all. This is what professional wrestling is supposed to be. And Mike, I don't know if you remember that angle, but to this day, I hearken back on that as one of my favorite moments to point out how psychologically wrestling should take you on that journey before they give you exactly what you want.
Right, and just think about this. That wasn't the end of that angle, because what ended up happening, as I'm recalling it, is that angle led to two things. that angle led to one, the Midnight Rider.
Midnight Rider, right.
And two, it led to Kevin Sullivan putting on a mask as what they call Lucifer. You know, and
right.
The end of that feud was a mask versus mask match, which the Midnight Rider won, and he had to unmask, and that was the ultimate making him eat it, you know, because he had to unmask from his character, you know?
Right. Exactly. Wrestling's a psychological journey. If it becomes just about who does the best move, we've lost our way, Todd. I don't know if you remember that whole angle. I'm sure you've probably seen it, but it's a brilliant example of how wrestling can manipulate the fans.
Oh, well, like you said, like you said, with that angle with Kevin Sullivan doing that satanic stuff with Dusty Rhodes and everything, and it was one of those angles where just you get it.
Yeah, and of course the fans get so upset. Now, today's fans, if Kevin Sullivan had pulled that, would probably root for Kevin Sullivan and say, oh, Dusty Rhodes is an idiot, he's a fat loser, who cares? You have to provoke the fans even further. And every fan I talked to about the ending of Monday Night Raw this week said, that was hard to watch. I'm a Kurt Angle fan, and maybe Drew McIntyre went a little bit too far. You know, I didn't like the fact that they let him win with the angle the ankle lock. And I didn't like the fact that he was really mocking him. And he made Kurt Angle look like, even if I give you my foot, you can't tap me out. And, you know, it was kind of a low-class type thing. And I said, exactly. Exactly. Now you get it. Same way with fans saying, oh, you know, that Leo Rush, he really is annoying, though. I mean, you know, God, please don't give him the microphone. And I'm like, exactly, now you get it. This is professional wrestling. That's what it's supposed to be. You're supposed to want somebody to knock Leo Rush's teeth out. You're supposed to want Drew McIntyre to be humiliated like he humiliated Kurt Angle. That's the point. And that's why I hope that this week's SmackDown has proven that the WWE know it now, and they're starting to shift and say, if we have these heels that are kind of in the gray area of people are cheering them, we're not going to bother. Let them cheer them if they want. We're not going to have them do anything too horrible or whatever. We're going to build heels now that fans say, there's no way I can cheer for this person. I hope that's the case. No one's cheering for Lashley because they hate Leo Rush. Now I think a lot of people won't cheer for Drew McIntyre. And I don't think a lot of people are cheering for Randy Orton anymore. They're starting to now move in this direction of our heels have to do heel things. Our heels have to be heels and not comedic, funny guys who are sort of right some of the time. And they're just kind of, you know, incorrigible rascals who, oh, they cheated a little bit, but, you know, they're still a nice guy. No, they're not doing that anymore. And Mike, I think that's way for the better.
The problem with it continuing on SmackDown is they're moving to Fox. And Fox doesn't want that. And,
yeah, I know. Fox wants MMA rigged.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to get into that a little more on Sunday's show of how that's going to change and what's going to happen with that. But for now, at least, the WWE has shown me that they're moving in the right direction. And as much as I get on them when they're moving in the wrong direction, I would be hypocritical if I didn't applaud them when they're going in the right direction. And right now they're going in the right direction. We've had a good Raw. We've had a good SmackDown. And we're very much looking at what should be, unless they blow it, a fantastic Survivor Series. Maybe one of the better ones I can remember. We'll be back here on Sunday with more Wrestle Chat Radio. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestle Chat Radio. Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.